I'm busy loving myself, putting me first. Now that I know I deserve more, I'm busy loving myself, putting me first. Made up my mind, I'm on my grind. My time to shine, you hit my line. I press decline, no time for that. I'm moving forward and right now. You're in my past, I've come too far to turn back now. Not going back, I see that everybody's sleeping on me. They really gotta see it to believe it.
What's up, y'all? This is your girl, Dr. Jamila T. Davis.
And I'm Tara Wallace.
And this is I Love Me More. So, y'all, it is going down today. Look at my twin.
Where have you been?
Yo, it's crazy. So, thank you. And so do you.
Thank you.
But before we get into that, right, let's just have a little fun. You want to have a little fun?
Yeah, I'm with it.
All right, so I got a little, we're going to do our old little light.
I don't know what this lady be thinking. I don't know what I'm about to get myself into.
No, it's just a little fun.
Okay.
We're going to do our old little lightning round.
Okay.
All right, so I have a couple of questions for you.
All right.
All right. Love or success?
Love or success?
Baby, this is supposed to go quick.
I'm sorry.
It's called lightning round for
success. Okay.
Success or marriage?
Success.
Okay. Would you rather be loved or feared?
Loved.
Loved or respected?
Respected.
Mm. Okay. Would you like to be single or PETA? That was just a trick. That was just a little trick question I put in there.
Single.
Okay. So that's like we got that little fun out the way.
Oh my God.
Girl, have you been healing through these episodes or what?
Yeah, these episodes are definitely, I miss a lot being shared. I'm learning a lot about myself and definitely healing.
Yo, it's so crazy because I remember being in prison and for the first time having these kumbayas with women. Mm-hmm. And we was talking about certain things. And then I realized for the first time, like, I wasn't alone. You know what I'm saying? So, y'all, when we say, I love me more, I'm going to just open up my shirt here. So, y'all see my shirt today, and I'm styling, and I'm wearing it with pride, y'all, because this shirt, for me, represents my affirmation that reminds me to love myself, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I'm happy that we matching today, and it goes with the theme of the decor, but it really goes with what's in our hearts, because we don't just talk about this thing. We're living it. Mm-hmm. And if you want to live it with us, you also could go to ilovememoreperiod.com, get your shirt and flex with us. And we ain't going to just flex. We're going to do this thing for real. So that's what it is.
Just a reminder to put yourself first.
That's right.
So a little daily reminder.
Exactly. The little daily affirmation and also an affirmation to others to let them know, baby, it ain't about you this time. It's me season.
It's me season.
Yeah, so I've been definitely doing my healing. I've been in my workbook, really, really putting some things on the table, really just dealing with me. I think that, you know, Tamika's episode did that for me. Like, sis had to really admit her faults, you know, like really admit where she went wrong. And it made me think to myself, damn, how many places have I gone wrong, right?
Right.
Some I got caught for, or some I'm still just maybe dealing with stuff or not, but where is it? Like, where are my faults? Where are the things that I need to check? And I'm loving our book because the book actually helped you to write that down, go into it, deal with it, go back and look at it more.
And then it's something you can do. You're doing it in the privacy of your own home. You're not confronted with anyone in your face. And some of this work you need to do alone, you know, so you can identify, acknowledge, you know, without feeling ridiculed or judged, and do the work at home. And that's what I do that, like at night before I go to bed or after some of our episodes, I pull out the book. Before we do episodes, I pull out the book. It's like to make sure that we're constantly in alignment and I'm constantly in alignment.
Since they don't understand this thing is real for us, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a game. Like, we live by this, right? Like, these are the commandments right here. Like, these are the steps. This keeps us in check. So, yes, I do mine daily with my coffee, like just reading, meditating, going over, you know, what my the guests have said, you know, what other people are saying online. Mm-hmm. I'm like, listen to them and, you know, listen to them work through the steps. And it's just real because they have a real place to journal, a real place to write, a real place to reflect. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So we're not just talking about the problem. This show is also about the solution. So if you haven't already, make sure you get yourself a copy of our new book, I Love Me More, The 8 Steps to Breaking Free from Toxic Relationships. And y'all, you can find that on our website at ilovememoreperiod.com or Amazon or wherever books are sold. So, Tara, I think it's about time for us to get into it.
Uh-oh.
I already know what that means, baby.
We have a new guest.
Oh, boy. And this guest might be one of the ones that top all guests. But before that we do that, we got some bills to pay?
We need to go pay some bills. Absolutely. So stay tuned. You don't want to miss this. And we'll be right back.
What's up, y'all? It's your girl, Dr. Jamila T. Davis, and I got a special offer for you, right? It's my gift from me to you. You want to level up? You want to manifest the life of your dreams? Well, I'm going to give you a piece of the plan, right? It starts with my Manifest It Now vision plan. So follow me. It's actually the template that I use each and every year to get into my goals, my dreams. And unlike a vision board, I actually put this document on paper with goals and dreams and plans of who I want to be and what I want to become. And now you could do it too. It's time to level up, y'all. It's time to be the best you that you can possibly be. And I'm going to give you the plan. And best of all, I'm going to give it to you for free. Click the link right here. Download today and level up. Make sure you share the results with me. This is the exact plan that I've been doing for the last 4 years. And each and every year is taking me higher and higher. And I pray it does the same for you. Woo-wee, honey. So y'all ready? You ready, sis?
I'm ready.
All right. This one you have to put your seatbelts on for, y'all. This is definitely where the healing begins. So our next guest up, she's a mother, she's a survivor. She now has an organization that I predict will be a movement. And she's someone that is near and dear to both Tara and I. So without further ado, let's give it up for our sister, Sonia Rogers. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Love seeing Sonia.
Baby, but first of all, let me thank you for coming on our show. I have a beautiful shirt for you, okay? We just talked about how this is our affirmation. This is yours, your I Love Me More shirt to remind you how important you are and how dope you are and that nobody matters more than you.
Love it. I love it. I love it.
That's what's up. So you ready, sis?
Yes, I'm ready. I'm here with both my beautiful sisters. I'm ready.
Okay, we specifically chose you because we knew that with our encounters with you, how deep your story is, how real and relevant your story is. As many of you guys know, Tara and I started our work in Newark, New Jersey at the Shawnee Baraka Center. And Sonia, you are from?
Newark, New Jersey.
Newark, New Jersey. Hey. So first of all, let's give it up for Newark. All right. We got a lot of history in Newark.
A lot of history now.
To this show is centered around Newark, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, it is a beautiful city. A city of so many memories for you. So let's start there. Let's talk about you and your life growing up in New Jersey, Newark, New Jersey. What did that look like?
Well, I'm there for 49 years. 49 years young in Newark, New Jersey. I went to the Newark Public School System, of course. Graduated high school, Central High School.
Okay, Central.
Big okay.
Growing up was easy in the beginning. My mom died when I was 10 years old.
Wow. So hold on. That don't start off easy, sis. She's talking about easy in the beginning. To be a 10-year-old child and you lose your mother.
And I was the only child.
Wow. So what did life look like for you after mommy died?
Well, actually, life was, it was like what they call for pillow to post. You know, I was from here to here. You know, everybody wanted to help. Because with me, I was a dollar sign to my grandmother. Because my mother worked all her life. And so, you know, when my mom passed away, she had a massive heart attack.
Was she young? My mother was 36. Wow.
My mother died October the 17th.
Wow.
1984. Her birthday is October the 18th.
Oh, wow.
1947. I had my oldest child October the 17th, 1989.
Wow. That's deep.
So, you know, I was with my mom when she passed away. She was taking me to school.
Wait. So she had a heart attack on her way to taking you to school? So what was that like as a 10-year-old? Was that your first encounter with trauma? Okay. So your mom, is she walking you? Is she driving you?
Yeah, she walked.
She was walking you to school?
Yeah, she drove, but we was walking that particular day. And we were walking. I was living down in the neck on Oxford Street, you know. So we were walking. And I asked my mother if I could walk up in front of her to walk with my friends, you know. So I let her hand go. And I walked in front. And not even about 5 minutes, you just heard a bunch of melee. And so I said, well, I just turned around and I just seen her face down on the ground.
Wow. As a 10-year-old.
So
what do you do?
So a priest came out of the church. Mm-hmm. And as the priest came out of the church, you know, he's praying over my mom. And so, you know, he says to me, he says, I need you to get down right here on your knee and I need you to hold her keys in her mouth. At that time, I didn't know what was going on, but now I know. I guess she was having a seizure or something. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I did that, and her heart must have busted open on the inside because the tears were coming out. It was, you know, she was crying a little bit of blood. So at 10 years old, that's kind of scary. But the crazy part about it is I didn't know that my mother passed away until the day of her await service.
So explain that.
The entire time you were thinking she was in the hospital?
The entire time I thought my mother was in the hospital.
So nobody told you? So how did they just take you to a funeral without having that hard conversation with you?
That part. And telling me my mom was in the hospital the whole time. So it was a bunch of denial. So when I got there, it was a place called Perry's Funeral Home. And so when I got there, it was just like, we're here. Why are we here? You know, but at 10 years old, you're not crazy. So, you know. And I'm just saying to myself, like, why am I here? And so my cousin, I'll never forget it, he picked me up in front of the door of the funeral parlor. And he said, you ready? And I'm like, ready for what? He was like, we're going to see your mother. And that's all.
So you mean to tell me somebody just, that's so insensitive. Mm-hmm. So did he carried you up to the, like, what do you mean?
Carry me up to the casket and... And I never seen my mother again. I couldn't even honestly tell you what my mother looks like.
Sis, I usually take my shoes off halfway through, but this one, baby, I'm going to get mine off first. Because this is unreal. You mean to tell me that a 10-year-old, you don't sit and tell the 10-year-old and prepare her for what she's going to see. You just take her to a dead body and say, this is it? And you didn't know your mom was gone?
No, all the while I thought my mother was in the hospital.
Wow. Oh my goodness. So now let's talk about life after that, because how do you remember what that felt like after? Did you wake up in the middle of the night? Did you cry? Like, how did you deal with your grief at such a young age without it being handled in a delicate way for you to be able to get through it?
Honestly, I wish I would have. At that time, I wish I would have went with my dad because my father loved me so much. But also, in the midst of all of that, going with my father and things of that nature, I got molested.
Whoa.
So.
Okay. So you go home with who? From the funeral home and everything that comes up?
With my mother's mother.
Okay. So you was with your mother's mother. Mm-hmm. And that's the one who you said you felt she treated you as a check. So what was that life like?
At 13 years old, you know, you have to work for Speedy and you have to somewhat take care of yourself because you're getting Social Security because your mother worked.
Mm-hmm.
And you're getting that retro, but you're not getting it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, my mother has all this money left over. You know, I'm getting a monthly stipend, but I'm not getting it. So I had to go out and obtain a speedy job to take care of myself. You know.
And so you're living in this home with your grandmother and you're not being taken care of.
Not how I was supposed to. You know, and you have to admit things like that. Because some things are driving crazy. So I had to start admitting that. That my grandmother was wrong. And as much as I heard the elders say it, the adults in the family say it, it was showing.
Because now you grab on to her because she's the only mom that you know. Right? So you loving on this woman from 10 to 13, and you said 13, you ended up having to go get a job because she wasn't really taking care of you with the check she was getting?
That's so deep. Right after my mom passed away, I started being molested, you know.
So now that was at your father's house? Is that when you would go to see him?
Yeah, that's when I would go see my dad. That's when I would go see my dad. And, you know, my father would not just leave me, but, you know, he would leave me where he thought was a safe haven. And
was that with another relative or? And so he left you with another relative thinking that you was okay. And this particular relative defied him.
Take me out the room. You know, and just tell me, like, you know, at a tender age, you're so beautiful, you're so pretty, you're so thick, you're so this and you're so that. And take me in the living room. And there was a couch about this size. And he would take me and put me on the floor and take my hands and put them. This hand goes here and this hand goes here. And, like, these marks, I know what they are. I know what these marks are. And, you know, and it happened for a long time. And I used to ask the question, like, why? Just why? I don't know. You know, maybe it's the pills I'm taking, the medication. But I was never in the room by myself.
So you say adults saw what he was doing to you?
Not adults, but, you know, it was other kids in the room. So my thing is, I'm quite sure, and you know, I started thinking about that as I started speaking about my story. I'm quite sure they knew that I was being taken out that room, you know, and things of that nature. You had to. I don't think that anybody was just that sound asleep.
Wow. So you saying he would wait till the other kids kind of go to sleep to come and get you out of the room? Wow. And this is as a kid. What did you fear him or like what was your response or and did you tell anyone?
Yes, I told my grandmother.
So when you came back, when you came back home after staying with your father, you came and you told your grandmother. And what did she say?
She told my dad.
Okay.
And I guess my dad was too embarrassed or something like that because he said he asked. He said, and when he asked, the question was like, no, 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 I didn't.
Wait.
And I never went back.
Okay, so you mean that stopped then? Yeah, so when you finally told, so was this happening for a while and then you told or you, okay.
From the time my mother died up until I was about 13.
And then finally you said, let me tell my grandmother. What made you finally get the courage to speak out and to talk about something like that?
Because I didn't want
to
go over there no more.
Oh, wow.
Because it was hurting to go over there. And I was starting to feel like I wanted to be with my mother.
Wow. So you saying at that young of an age, after losing your mother, finding out how you lost her, and then being abused, you actually felt like you wanted to die yourself?
It was nothing here. I have no brothers and sisters with my mother. It's just me. It was just me and my mom.
Wow.
And my father was a good father, but they weren't together.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you're dealing with that, that's the only person I ever loved.
That's deep.
Oh my goodness.
Wow, I'm so sorry you had to go through that. But thank you for sharing because there's so many others that have experienced that type of trauma at such a young age. And you, for you, there was death and then there was
destruction.
You know, molestation, like golly, like a little kid. But I'm so proud of you because we know we're going to fast forward it to the end and you made it. So I just want to just commend you, sister, because you made it. You made it. You made it. Despite what it looks like.
Right.
You know, God brought you through. So I want you to know that.
God, how did that affect from that moment on your relationship with your father?
I didn't have one. I felt like my father both didn't protect me. And I'm daddy's little girl. And I felt like he didn't protect me. But as I got older, I had to realize that forgiveness is worth everything. And not every day that I practice that, but that's my father. And you know, you hear it again from older people in your family. You have respect to elders.
So you saying that you became estranged from him because you didn't feel like he went after the person? Have you ever in your adult life ended up, you know, confronting a person or seeing a person?
Yes. I never confronted him because it's like when he see me, he knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it was at one point I left and I went to go visit my dad and he was around. And, you know, we was taking pictures and stuff. And it's so crazy because it's like the pictures that I took with my father, he's right in the back.
Wow.
And, you know, having my own children, I don't want my children
around that.
Mm-hmm, my daughter's kid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you never got to, like, confront him or say to him, like, why did you do this to me? Wow.
Because if you lied to my father, imagine what you can't lie to me. I'm the one you did it to. You can't lie to me.
So holding that. So you had to hold that thing in because you wasn't really able to deal with it. And I know that there's so many women out there who've experienced the same thing, and it's often a family member or friend or somebody that's often trusted. Wow. All right. That's deep. Mm-hmm. So now that's your two pieces of loss. Take us through now growing up. You get through it. You make it. You're 13. So what happens after 13?
So after 13... I figured it, like, this is life.
Mm-hmm.
Your mother's not coming back. Mm-hmm. This is what's going on. You see the type of grandmother that you have. She loves you, but she loves money. So, you know, this is what you have to do. At 15 years old, I had my first kid.
Wow.
I had my first kid at 15. And, you know, honestly, you would think that that would shape you for something worse, but it molded me for something much better. Mm-hmm. It taught me how to love. It taught me how to be strong. As a 15-year-old, you would have thought that I was an older woman because I took care of that baby. I never left that kid. That kid was with me. That was in 89.
It was a son, right? Your son? And he gave you something to love for. So you found love again. So when love was all lost, you found love again in your first son. And his name?
His name is Anthony Darnell Rogers.
Wow, Anthony.
Anthony Darnell Rogers.
So that was really almost like your first love.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's my twin.
Wow. So y'all grew up together because you're so close in age.
That part. Mm-hmm. But I always was a mother. I never played the sister role or the friend role.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, I had a grandmother. So I raised old school. Believe it or not, my rules was old school.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody could stay outside. None of that. My kids graduated out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and with that, where we come from, that's not a plan.
Mm-hmm.
That's not in the decisions to have, because no one makes it to high school with a young mother. But I did that with five children.
That's what's up. You said five in total?
I had five. I had my first son was born October the 17th, 1989, which was the day my mom passed away.
Mm.
4 years before that.
Wow. So God, like, look at God.
And my mother's
the birthday. Day of loss, yeah. you gained. The same day of the loss.
Right.
4 years later, you gained.
Right.
Wow.
So in 1992, January the 23rd, I had a son. And his name was Antoine Darrell Rogers. In April of 1993, I had a daughter. Her name is Shavante Amira Rogers.
Wow. So that was like back, you started having your kids back to back.
89, 92, 93.
Mm-hmm. 93
was my second daughter.
Wait. So did you tell me every year you was just doing it up?
I had a baby. And you know what's so crazy? Because I think that the crazy part about it is it sounds so cliche, but I wasn't the type that just would sleep around.
Mm-hmm.
I was in relationships with these people for like years. Mm-hmm. Like me and my first two kids' fathers, we was together for so long. My daughter's father, we was together for like 7 years. I always looked for love, mm-hmm. you know, for somebody for protection.
Mm-hmm.
And so my second daughter, she was born November the 23rd, 1993.
Mm-hmm.
And my baby, which was a boy, he was born April the 11th of 1995.
Okay, so how many sons and how many daughters?
Three boys and two girls.
Okay, so take me through what life looked like growing up and raising those five babies.
So, because I wanted to ask you, where were you living? Where's at 15? No, where were you, like, were you living with family? Had you moved out
on
your own?
Well, at 15 years old, I was still living with my grandmother.
Okay.
Until I got 18 and I got my own apartment.
Okay.
From the same community where we lived at,
mm-hmm.
it was called like a branch hall.
Okay.
So I just got my own apartment. There were struggles,
mm-hmm.
but my kids were never taken away from me at all. They were never taken away from me. They went to the doctor. They went to school. You know, I always took care of them
mm-hmm.
as a parent. And, you know, to hear that now, how older people speak of me and say, you were such a good mother, such a young mother.
Mm.
And it gives you this, like,
sense of pride.
Yes.
That's what's up.
And I think that's what keeps me pushing
mm-hmm.
because I didn't give up. And I knew it was a purpose to have those children. I didn't know what the purpose was at that time, but I knew you had to take care of these children.
Right.
You have these babies, you got to take care of them.
Okay, so you have the babies, you're taking care of them, you're making them follow by the rules, they can't go outside and do all the crazy stuff. So tell me, when was the changing point with your sons where they started trying to break loose from you a little bit?
When I started allowing them to be around their father.
Wow. So let's talk about that.
It's an unfortunate situation. My sons were, you know, they were trying the streets, but they weren't gang affiliated. So I allowed them to start spending time with their father, which was the worst mistake I could have ever made in my entire life. Because one black woman had control of those two black young men. And I let a single black hand come and destroy it all.
So let's talk about what you mean by that destruction. Because most people would say, you know, a boy needs his father.
Right.
Like, you can't be a dad to them. They need that father figure. So why would you say it was, what makes you feel as though that decision?
You know, sometimes and all the time, these young men need a man.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also the type of man that you have around your child.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if it's their father, the grandfather, whoever. It has to be a positive impact.
That's correct.
Because to look back on it now, this one single black woman raised those black men.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any of that trouble until I let them hang out with you.
Okay, so now tell me what that looks like once they start hanging out with dad.
It's just a life of gangbang. And you couldn't really tell that they were in gangs because, like I said, I was in control. So you don't have on a red flag. You don't have on this, but it's where you're from. It's the people you're hanging out with. And, you know, I had my times when I had to run in schools. I had my times where my boys was incarcerated in a youth house.
Okay, hold on. So they went from being good, not can't come outside and do all the craziness, so now you got to run up in schools and youth houses. Like, did it happen that quick? Like, take us through that process.
With the youth house, it was more so like you got caught doing something. And back then, the cops would really take the kids to the youth house. Mm-hmm. So that's what it basically was. You know, it wasn't no...
So when you catching them and you seeing them doing this, what are you saying? What are you doing? Are you like, all right, we not doing this no more? Like, are you putting your foot down?
I'm reprimanding you. I'm putting my foot down. Mm-hmm. I left you in the juvenile detention center for about a day or so. Because as a mother, it doesn't really sink too well. But I left you there because I didn't raise you that way.
Mm-hmm. So what is the father saying?
The father's not happening? Saying too much because he's not there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you don't want him around because now look what happened. Mm-hmm. So now let me try to regroup this back. The only thing I got out of that was respect from two young black men. Well, three young black men. I got respect because nobody could stand in my face and talk disrespectful to me.
But behind your back, they were doing these things. Now, their father was affiliated?
793.
So because of his affiliation, he now introduces his kids into it, and he thinks it's okay for them to be a part.
Unfortunately.
Wow.
So, you know, sometimes I ask myself, did he even love his children?
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard.
So let's get into the hard part of this conversation. Because many of them... that are listening now, they're thinking, wow, this young girl lost her mom at 10. You know, she also, a piece of her was taken at 13. Now at 16, she has these five kids, three of them being male children, and she's doing her best to reclaim her life and be the best mom that she can be. Now she entrusts her three boys, who she doesn't let out of her sight, go be with his dad, who is a gangbanger, right? Or gang affiliated. And now what? Take us to the first trauma that happened with your three boys.
May the 31st of 2011, which was a Tuesday. I was at work, Central High School. I ended up working at the high school I graduated from. Anyway, I'm at work at Central High School. The ending of the day. We're in the office listening to the police scanner. And so we hear on the police scanner that there's been a robbery on High and Spruce Street at the pharmacy. So it's so crazy because I made the statement to say, we in here being nosy. Mm-hmm. And the same people could be out here doing the same thing just like that. And they could get away with it because all they said was all available units come there.
Mm-hmm.
So all the police going to be there when somebody could be out, you know. So about 10 to 20 minutes after that, I got ready to leave. I'm going home. So I walked out to go out the front door. There was a young lady standing there in the gym. A lot of the kids call me auntie because in Newark, you know, everybody goes together. So... she says to me, she looks at me, but in the midst of it, she's like jumping up and down. And so she's like, auntie, auntie, auntie. So I'm like, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, whatever it is, tell OB, which is the mayor that we have now, which is his brother. So she told him what happened. He looked at me and he said, you have to get to the hospital. But at that point, the mayor now, which was... a principal of school, he said, son, we got to go to the hospital. My son got shot. So,
is this Central High School?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But my son had graduated high school. He graduated from Weekway High School.
Mm-hmm.
So about 3:30 that afternoon, early in the day. And I'm going to tell you why I said early in the day. So at 3:30 in the afternoon, my son got shot 5 times in his car. I went to the hospital on June the 21st at 10:36 a.m. The same life that I brought into this world, I took him out of this world. And I have to live with that every day because my son would still be here if I wouldn't have took him off of a respirator because he was young. His heart was still beating, it was still pumping and everything. But I just couldn't live with the fact that my son was brain dead. I watched paralysis set in on him from the neck down. in a matter of days. My son was getting 4 and 5 pints of blood a day. His hospital bill, after everything was said and done, I've never seen a hospital bill for $453,000 in 2 years.
Wow.
It wasn't $40,000, it was $400,000.
So basically he was brain dead, so he wasn't here anymore. Although his body was pumping, once his mind is gone, he's not here.
Yeah, so I made the decision, like I said, with the mayor that we have now, which is a close friend, and he's still a friend. And, you know, it was a couple of people around, and he helped me make a decision because he was there every day. And so when the doctor talked to me, he talked to him. And so I asked him, I said, do you see what the doctor's talking about? So he says to me, he said, yeah. So I said, it's done. It's nothing else. He just was like, because my son got shot here. The bullet broke off, and that's where all the fragments came. My name is on his arm right here. The eye in his arm is where another bullet went. The back of his neck here, and his hands. But however it went, I took him off the respirator. I unplugged the respirator, and, you know, I live with that. I live with that every day.
Well, I hope that you're not feeling in any type of way about that decision, because even if that was me and you was my mother and I was brain dead and couldn't move no more and couldn't do any of the functions, I would want you to take me off and let me go back to see my maker. So I hope that you forgive yourself for that, because I believe that you made the right choice. Whew, that was a time and an experience, and it's so crazy that you talk about the mayor, right? And the city, and we just talking about all this connections. I don't know if you know, but that same mayor, which is Mayor Ross Baraka, is the person that helped to change Tara and I's life.
That's what he is so amazing. It's so sad because when you're dealing with politics, you have to deal with politics. That's why I don't deal with politics. I deal with my love and my loyalty and my humbleness.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the magnitude of love that I have for that man. It's something different. Mm-hmm. That's my friend. That's my brother. He's too young to be my father. But, mm-hmm. You know, that's my friend.
But you have respect brother. For him like mm-hmm. a father. Yeah.
Because I know he loves me genuinely out of all of this politics stuff. And I know that if he could have, he would have saved each and every life, not just mine. Mm-hmm. Any kid, he would have saved them. See, the thing is, I don't just think about myself in my city. Because I'm not the only parent mm-hmm. that has lost their child.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be so selfish of me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Even though my number may be bigger, or it may be the same as other people, but I'm not the only woman in this city that has lost children.
It's crazy, because what you don't even know you're doing is you're bringing it home. The very first guest that we had on our show was, at the time, she was Director Keisha Urie, right? Mm-hmm. And now she is Deputy Mayor Keisha Urie. We decided collectively that she would be our first guest because it was Mayor Baraka who gave Tara and I a platform at the Shawnee Baraka Center back in 2020, right? Before the pandemic. Mm. And we started these healing sessions, right? So this seat that you're sitting on, mm-hmm. this work started in Newark yes. at the Shawnee Baraka Center because your mayor gave two women mm-hmm. that wasn't even from his city, but that he believed in us and gave us a chance and an opportunity to create transformation in the city. And we began to do the work. And then they created the Office of Violence Prevention, which is all about this. So you're actually sitting on the seat confirming why this work is necessary, confirming the people who need the work and why. And, you know, so
when you came to the city, it wasn't like you came. You came as family.
Mm.
You came to the city as family. So, and I could say we. We adopted you from Newark.
Aww.
You're here and you're from Newark, you know, because you didn't come with an agenda. You didn't come with anything hidden. It was all love. And that's what we respect, because we don't have that for ourselves there. Mm. My sons got killed by Black men from the community.
Which is crazy. So that's your first son. Now take us to son number two and what happened with him, because our audience still doesn't know yet. So all they know right now is she lost her mother, She's been traumatized and abused, and now she lost her first son.
What year was that again?
2011.
Okay, so now we at 2011, and let's keep going. So now take us to the next year.
Oof. So 6 months later, 2012, I was on the phone with my second son when he got shot and killed.
What?
So, you know, a lot of this stuff, it sounds so, but this is so real.
Mm.
And not saying because if I can sit here, anybody could do it, because it's so hard. Mm. Because I'm only doing it because of the work that we do together and the mayor. And believe it or not, my sister, Keisha, did this before the mayor type deputy thing and all this. We was doing this work already.
Mm.
So you have to respect that, and I have to put that out there, because I leaned on my sister's shoulders a lot before these titles came out, before any of this stuff came out. So, you know, February the 24th.
So wait a second now. Your son, the second son, was also in the life, right? Both of your sons were in the life?
Yes, because I can't say that they weren't in a gang or nothing like that, because that's what they told people. And so I wouldn't want to sit here and say, no, my son's...
Well, even if they wasn't in a life, I know that if a brother, somebody kills my brother, and I'm sort of kind of in a life or associated with a life, my next step is...
But you know...
I'm pulling up.
The sad part about it was he wasn't even like that.
Wow.
They killed my last two sons senseless.
Wait. So you done just dropped the ball on them. Not one son, not two sons, but three sons, victims of gun violence. Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, so...
So now we have son number two.
Mm-hmm. So you're on the phone with him.
6 months later, So 6 months later, 2012, February the 24th, he called me. I'm at my girlfriend's house. He called me. And I call him Nunu. And so I said, Nunu, you know, what you doing? You know, how you feeling? Because he was at his girlfriend's house in Broadway. So he says to me, he was like, you know, he says, oh, my, you know, I'm a little stressed out because you know what happened to his brother, whatever. So I'm saying to him, I'm like, you're going to be okay. Like, you're going to be okay, you know, because it was our first time ever dealing with something in that nature. And so, not even 5 minutes of us, I heard him talking on the phone, talking to somebody. And he said, you don't got to worry about it. I ain't going over there. And it was my girlfriend. Somebody was calling him, and she said to him, she was like, don't go over there, Nunu. And he was like, don't worry about it. I'm not going over there. So in the midst of all of that, I asked him if I could see him. I said, Nunu, I want to see you. I haven't seen you in like 2 weeks. I want to see you. Because he was in Broadway at his girlfriend's house. And so he was like, okay, Ma. He said, I'm going to meet you on Bedford Street. I said, hurry up. Come on, because I'm on my way. In the midst of it, the phone call dropped, but I heard the melody a little bit, you know. And so the phone call picked back up. And after the phone call picked back up, they called my phone back from his phone. And I'm in the phone like, Nunu, what happened? Like, what's going on? There's somebody else screaming in the phone. And they like, Sonya, you got to hurry up. You got to come. Nunu just got shot.
Jesus.
And I'm like, where's Nunu? No, I said, where's Nunu? They said, Nunu just got shot. He right here.
So where did he come to Newark, or was this in Rahway?
No, he was in Newark.
So he was coming to see you. So he was in Rahway, but he was trying to come and see his mom.
I feel like I called him to his death. So I have to
say that.
I have to... It's certain things that I have to live with through the course of my life. Taking my son off the respirator. Telling my son I miss him to come and see me. And I took too long. I knew I should have met him. I should have met him there. that wouldn't have happened to him if I would have met him near. But I have to deal with that. So, 2000 and...
Well, before we even go any further, I feel like this is such a heavy story, and I see you putting so much blame on yourself, which allows me to know that healing is still necessary and required here, because you could never call anybody to their death. The things that you are holding yourself responsible for, like a parent just wants to hug her kid. You wanted to love on your baby, so you wasn't asking for someone to do something destructive to your child. Those were the demons that were chasing those babies.
The same group of people killed all three.
Wow. My God. So you're saying that they had beef with a particular set?
And see, that's the whole thing, because, like I said, you can't be in denial. My oldest son could have got killed by the whole city of North because his name was so big. They didn't want that. It took a community where they were born and raised, a family that was just jealous, envious, you know, stuff like that. They had their little times of beefs or whatever, but that came from a community. It wasn't a set beef. Those last two, it's like a wolf cry, because I'm telling the truth. But who believes that those last two got killed for nothing? You got three sons that got murdered by guns. Come on, lady. But it's the truth. I'm really telling the truth.
So do you feel like, where do you feel like the hate stemmed from?
Because my oldest son could go anywhere he wanted to go. He didn't have to stay confined. See, in Newark, when you could do whatever you want and however you want to do it, either you're going to be ridiculed for that, or it's some type of consequence behind that.
So you mean because he wasn't claiming a set, he was down with everybody?
Go anywhere he want to go and do whatever he want to do. They couldn't do that. They couldn't do that, you know.
So these were the people in the neighborhood that they was raised in?
A group of a family.
A family. So a family just like your family. Mm-hmm. So this is a family.
But they were so big, and my family.
So this is not a gang, it's just a family.
No, just a family of people. They were in a gang too, but my family consists of six people, me and five children. Their family consists of a bunch of boys, girls, aunts, uncles, cousins, you know, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And they just thought it was okay, you know? And I don't know, it's just so crazy.
So your son, you're on the phone with him, and just somebody from this family just walks up and shoots him.
It was three people. He got shot one time in his shoulder.
And from a shoulder shot, he ended up passing away.
Yeah, because he was stressed out and he was scared. He didn't want to get shot. And that's the part that drives me sick. Because he told me that.
What'd he say?
He was scared. My son didn't want to die. He was petrified out of his mind.
Wow.
He was stressed out over his brother.
So he was staying in Rahway to stay safe. And you feel like that would have been the best place for him to stay. And had you known, you would have just went to visit him in Rahway. Do you feel like that's being selfish, though, sis?
A little bit, because because Antoine's birthday was just the 23rd of January. My son had just cut his hair, everything. And for you to get killed, because he literally got killed, February the 24th, you got killed a month and a day after your birthday. Mm-hmm. See, my mind thinks that way.
Like, but at this time, you didn't know this family had some personal vendetta against you.
No,
against the kid.
I knew that their children didn't like those children, but you never could have told me that they would have did that to those last two. And I knew my oldest son probably would have probably got a shot. It's the life he lived, but he wasn't disrespectful. This is why he didn't get killed in the city of Newark.
So now,
the last son. How does that happen? Now, how old is he? Is he very young, right, compared to the others?
The first two were 21.
When they both passed away at 21.
Right. So this is why I have those significant numbers. My boy's 21, 21.
Mm-hmm.
My baby just stood in my room that night before, 3 days after Christmas, and said to me, "Oh, Mom, I'm going to be good," you know, because he had just signed up for college, whatever. I'm gonna be good, cause you know my brothers ain't make it to 21. I'm about to be 21. I'm about to be 21 next year, December the 28th of 2015. My son came in the house, and I was sitting in the living room, and he came in the house, and he looked. He said, "Ma, you look ugly sitting over there in that chair. You look cool." I said, "No, you ugly because it's cold outside. Where's your jacket?" He didn't have his key to get in his room. So he left back out with my cousin. He went back outside on 12th Avenue on 11th Street. Not even 20 minutes after he left out the door, they came to my house. My nephews, my little cousins, some kids that I, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to hurry up and get to the hospital. For what? They said, and I called them Kwani men. His name was Taekwon Sharik Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I said, for what? They said, Kwani men just got shot. And he was like, but son, you got to hurry up. He said, because he got shot in his head.
Jesus.
So at that point, I dropped in front of my door, my bedroom door. But then I couldn't even do the necessary things that I wanted to do, scream, yell, and all this other stuff. Because at this point, that's your third kid.
Mm.
That's your baby. You can't break and fall now. You got to put your big girl drawers on. You got to go identify this kid. My son is not a John Doe. He got a name and he got a mother. So now I have to go down here because at that point, now the hospital is like, well, somebody needs to come
and identify him.
Right. But I didn't know until about 7-something at night. Mm-hmm. And so when I get there, I didn't have time with my last two sons at all like I did with my first son. It was like the hospital, you know, it happened and the hospital gave you a little 5 minutes or whatever, but you're about to go.
Mm.
And so with that particular one, when I sat in that room, like how we're sitting here now, and the doctors came in, I knew it was something because the nurse left out crying. She was the one that was supposed to tell me, but she couldn't. And she let the doctor do it. And when she came again after she got herself together, she said, I couldn't even find myself to talk to you as a parent. Mm-hmm. She said, because I'm not understanding how you lost three children. She said, and this one is your baby. She said, and the first shot took him out. She said, why somebody shot him 5 times is overkill. And to tell these stories, you would think he was out here beefing with somebody and all this other stuff, and it wasn't like that. One group of a family, because you didn't like somebody. But if you already took the first one, why did you take my other two? Because it sickens my soul.
So did they ever solve these crimes? No.
They know who did it, but they never got arrested.
Wow. And you never ever had a chance to find out the why? Yeah. Why was it so crazy? Like, what do they feel like that was done to them that was so offensive that they needed
to
do
this? Well, you
know,
where we live at, it's called the new community. And, you know, it was about money and who had this and who could do this and who could do that. And, you know, my son had a name on the street. So, you know, whatever he did on the street is what he did on the street. But he didn't allow it to come home.
Okay, so help us understand mm-hmm. that. So, because some of our viewers right now, they feeling all kind of ways. I know yeah. right now, I know the story, but my heart is still going. I could see my co-host over there looking in the daze. Like, so we just gotta get some real blunt questions to understand. So I understand that your son, and particularly your older son, was heavily influenced by his dad, right? Mm-hmm. And I understand he was respectful when it came to you, but what was his street rep? Like, from what people have now come back and told you, like, what did his street life look like?
Well, they called him Ransom in the street.
Ransom?
They called him Ransom in the street. And like I told you, they said he was very respectful, but he would rob, well, extort. he would extort you, you know, or something like that. But if he knew you and an older person came or whatever, he just had a lot of respect. But that's hard to justify when you're in a gang. So it's a lot.
So he was someone that put the pressure on people. So you say a person that his name is Ransom. So
yeah, they compared him to Cain and Abel.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Hello, friends. It's your girl, Dr. Jamila T. Davis, and I have a special announcement. We are finally opening up the Black Women's Lives Matter community. So what does that mean in real time? We can fellowship with you. We have this platform that we're giving to you for absolutely free. And it's a place where you can learn from other Black women just like you. And we're going to be learning real things, speaking to experts about finances, relationships, fashion, makeup, parenting. You name it, we got it in the community. It's a place that we can fellowship and also heal. We're also going to be having therapy in the community. There's a lot of things that we need to talk about to get off our chest, you know, and we're going to do it in a safe place where we can learn from experts about how to maximize our potential and become the best us that we can possibly be. So what does this mean? It's time to click the link in our bio and join today. It is absolutely free. It costs you nothing. And it will grow you so much, I promise you. So meet me in the community. You get to actually work with me this year. I'm going to be doing some one-on-ones. I'm going to be doing some group work. And it's all about leveling up. Meet me in the community. I'll see you soon. And y'all already know what it is. It's going down.
So I think that this is a place to have a real conversation, right? Because you have a mother who has had three kids taken out. Mm-hmm. Now, you have a family that may have some kind of something. But now when you tell me this kid, the Cain and Abel thing, mm-hmm. right? You know, that he didn't allow you to see. And we don't know what drove him or what he saw that led him to this. But give us more understanding of that. Was he feared by people? Was, okay.
Yes. That's the thing. His name was more than him. My son only weighed 135 pounds. Mm. His name weighed about 350.
Wow.
There's a lot of things that, you know, my son was incarcerated that they would say he would, that he's done. And he was incarcerated for almost 3 or 4 months. So, you know, his name was bigger than him.
But what were some of the things he was incarcerated for?
He was incarcerated for 30 days for one time. It was involved with him and about 7 other guys with one gun in a car. But these are the same group of guys that set him up to get killed. These people that grew up together.
These guys started off as friends.
Yeah, they grew up together.
And see, guys, this is an important conversation, right? And y'all that got sons, I want you to pull your sons up to the screen now. Because this is the part that we want your sons to sit and get to understand what happens. Because folks don't really get it until it happens to them. I know for me, someone who's been incarcerated, someone who did 12, you know, years in prison. When I was sentenced to 12, I did 9.5. I know the people who I thought was my friends jumped on that stand and testified against me. So I think it's important now that we have our young boys take a look at you, a hurting mother, so they can understand what comes with this lifestyle. I think if we speak from that place, that'll be helpful right now.
And it's true, but also it's the parent. Because you can't be in denial about your child.
Ooh.
You can't be in denial about your child. My son was in a gang. I can't sit here and tell you that. My son was an angel, and he didn't deserve any of that. As a mother, I didn't want my son to get killed. None of them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the life he lived, what he thought was going to happen to him.
Mm.
But he didn't deserve that.
Correct.
Then.
So all these things are happening. It still brings me back to the father who's in the in this life. You know, what is he saying?
He was in lock. He was locked up.
So daddy's gone. Daddy's repping the set. Mm-hmm. So you getting props off of daddy's name, too, because if daddy is anybody in the situation, you know what I'm saying? Daddy, somebody.
He had done succumbed, daddy.
So that he done beat daddy to the...
He had done succumbed, daddy. Daddy had done... Daddy is locked up. Daddy is just... You just...
So, you know, and all of this, one thing we haven't really talked about are your daughters.
They're torn apart so much to the point to whereas my oldest daughter doesn't even know how to respect her hurting mother. We're torn apart so much that my oldest daughter was on her way up here to come get her little brother, to pick him up. She hasn't been back up here to stay. She don't even want to come back. And my kids was born and raised in New Jersey. We never lived in North Carolina at all. So, you know, I see what it did to those kids. It stripped my kids of their everything. We've seen people go through that before, but it, when it's, how they say it, right in your backyard, that's right in my backyard.
So I these sisters have trauma.
Your youngest daughter, is she?
Both of my daughters, because they love their brothers. I grew them because it was only us.
Yes.
So you had to love each other. Because you got to take care of each other. You know. Guys, I'm not going to say they didn't argue or whatever, but you got to take care of each other. It's just five of you and me. So, you know, it's a love that was so longed for that when I learned how to do it better, that's when I cut so
short. Wow. This is so deep, but it's so real. And I was going back to the part with the friends that he started with, the friends that he was caught in a car with, the friends that he was riding with. You said those ended up being some of the friends in the end that ended up taking him out.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about that story because that's a very important story.
Well, you know, back in 2009, I was in a relationship for a significant amount of years. And, my significant other got killed on mystery night. And,
oh, wow. Just when the plot, we thought the plot
was. So it's just a story amongst a story. But, you know, I learned how to deal with these things. I don't know why and I don't know how. You know, I lost everything. I'd have been through everything. I lost a significant other. And we were very close.
Did your kids watch him? So was this before your sons died or this was after?
This was before my sons passed away. And you know, it's
now, was he in the life?
No, he wasn't. No, he wasn't. He was just too tough for himself. And you know, when people fear you, that's a problem. He was just too tough for himself. And it was a guy that didn't really care for him too much. The same guy, you know, that had something to do with my second son. Didn't care for him too much, you know, because he just thought it was all about him. You got your cars, money, and all this other stuff, and you're not really from around here either. You just moved around here a couple of years ago. So, you know, that's another thing that happened. But, you know, I brought that up because he said, Sonya, he said, your son name too big for him. He said, and I see him out here. He said, Darnell going to be somebody in these streets. He said, I don't know what he going to be, but he going to be somebody out here. And he always said that. He said, he's going to be somebody out here. He said, but he just need to take it and do the right thing with it. He said, because everybody want to follow him. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to follow him. Mm-hmm. Everybody want to follow him.
Wow.
Has there been any time where you just thought to, before, you know, we got this far into it, to just pick up and leave like your daughters and just...
I wanted to, but I had nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. See, my daughter was with her boyfriend because she got old enough. She was 20-something. So, you know, she had a boyfriend or whatever. I didn't have any of that. I just had me and those kids.
So you were stuck there? Or you felt you were stuck there?
No, I knew I was stuck. Because I didn't have the means, the ways, or the money to get
to there. Get to do anything else. Mm-hmm. It's important. I think that this is in this story. There's so much here in this story. And I want to change it, the pace a bit, because you're doing some great things now. And I want to talk about your healing. And I still see that there's a need for more healing, as all of us, right? We are a work in progress. But one of the things I'm going to ask you is, how did you get through? Loss after loss, after another loss, after one more loss, after then the loss of your baby son. How did you manage to get through that?
When New Year's came, New Year's Eve came, and nobody, and I had over 300 and something people in my house the days before that. And when New Year's Eve came, it was just me. I had to mend it all together. Because of Baraka, Mr. Baraka, I had to mend it all together. And then because of who I was, I didn't want my name to be slandered. I really thought that it wasn't tolerable for me to hurt because of who I was. I didn't think that it was in my best interest to grieve how I wanted to. Because had I would have grieved how I wanted to, probably wouldn't be sitting here.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like the you at 13 that realized that you were all alone around all these people is the same woman that realized that she was alone around all of these people.
So and nobody did.
Perhaps that was like a unfortunate familiar space.
It's almost like you had to go through that as a kid to be able to handle it as an adult. Mm-hmm. That's so scary.
You know, that's crazy that you said that. I sat back one night and I just was thinking and I said, you know, like how they say stuff meant to happen. Was any of this meant to happen like that? For just to see my strength, or what is it? Because in a blink of an eye, I can go in a dark place. I have depression written all over me. I cry every single day. On days that nobody sees me cry, I cry. This month is a hard month for me. I'm a walking human calendar. You know that. This month is a hard month for me. The 24th is coming up. Last month was a hard month for me. It's his birthday. March, get a little breather. Here comes April.
This is real. And this is a real place for so many other mothers, right? And I don't even think our kids understand that. When you get yourself connected to this life, you know, the Bible says you live by the sword, you die by the sword. Right? Like, this is what it is. Like, people don't really understand karmatic law. What you put out in the world is what you get back. And some, it's not even, it's just mistaken things. But definitely when we start that roll of energy, you know what I'm saying? We got to roll it back. And what I'm loving about where you are going, because you're still healing though, is that you still got a heart for the people. So could you tell folks a little bit about what you have created and what you're doing for other mothers that's going through this pain such as yours?
Well, I speak to the mother of the young man that killed my baby.
Oof.
I don't speak to her as a conversation, but if I see her, I speak to her because I'm trying to get in heaven, number one.
But that's hard,
sis. You have to be a little humble. I won't speak to her every day, but you know, I don't know what it is. I saw her one day. I was going somewhere for my husband. I saw her and it happened. I see the father of the people, which is her brother, that did that to my other sons. Hey, Sonya, how you doing? Hey, Bubba, how you doing? I don't want to, but when it happens, it happens.
Because I imagine they don't know they can't. Like, how would you, you know what I mean? Like, they can't be responsible. Well, I guess people say they could.
That particular family could be responsible.
So do you feel like that they grooming their kids to be this?
No, I don't feel like that. But I feel like they knew. And, you know, just like how I tried to intervene and I said stuff to my son, because my son never did nothing to them. And he could have. He could have. But somebody should have intervened. Some adult should have intervened.
So you feel like you stopped your son from doing them greasy?
Mm-hmm. And then he got done dirty.
So then that's another thing that repeats in your head to say, wow, why did I ever stop him? I should have just let him go.
Whew. As a parent. But you know, like I said, it sounds like a wolf cry because you have three sons that was murdered and then in the city they were murdered in. You know, I got ridiculed a lot. A lot of people said I wasn't a good mother, stuff like that. I had to deal with a lot. But I know who I am. So that's why I'm able to sit and stand and go the way I do, because I know who I am. There's not a lot of men or women that could sit in my shoe.
That's right.
So that's why I go the way I go. And I'm not going to ever let anyone defamate my character.
No.
Being a mother.
Nope. And one of the things that we talk about in our book, right, I Love Me More, is about self-forgiveness, right? dealing with the situation and knowing that we are not the mistakes that we've made, right? God, if I'm the mistake I made, then God would have got rid of me a long time ago. So it's the healing seat that you're in now. It's actually the place that, you know, transformation happens. And I feel like it's our duty, because you're our sister, to help bring you into this next transition of healing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's not just for you, it's for so many others. So talk to me about your new thing that you're putting together. Mm-hmm. And let's see, y'all, not just us, because, you know, we jump in and we help. Y'all out there, mm-hmm. how are we helping our sister? Because y'all heard the stories. Y'all seen the losses. Y'all understand everything that she's been going through. But we want her to know, this shit not alone.
Well, that's important, because through all of this, one of the other things that I hear is this this helplessness. You know, whether it was when you were a little girl, or not being able to leave Newark when you wanted to, feeling stuck in these situations that you can't, you know, leave or get out of or move away from. And to now take all of that and to try to do something positive.
Because, you know, so I started a nonprofit,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, and I'm trying to get the platform down, because it's...
So what is your nonprofit called?
It's called Through Our Voices.
Okay.
But I'm also, my husband has a nonprofit called, it's all about the seniors and kids, you know, and we deal with trauma. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with mine, I'm more focused on parents that depression is big for me and trauma and loss is big for me. There's not a lot of parents out here that can sit like me. You know, and which is not, I'm not tooting my own horn, because it's very hard. Mm-hmm. But if we can come collectively
together. So do you have other mm-hmm. women that come together with you that have had experienced loss with their kids?
Or? Well, I have women, and you know, it's so crazy because these are friends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have friends. I have a girlfriend who just recently went through the same thing I went through. Her son was murdered, and then her daughter was murdered.
Oof.
So, yeah, so, you know, it's so crazy because it's like you don't have to go out and find these people. They're right there.
So now what does your collective healing look like together? Like, y'all talk to each other? Like, yes. What does that process look
yes.
like?
You know, you communicate. You talk about it. It's called the shoulder to lean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even when we interact with the mobile truck and mm-hmm. stuff, you know, going out to cut hair, talking to these different people and stuff like that, and being able to pull up to these people mm-hmm. to give them that. You know how many people that are so stressed out and depressed that don't want to come outside,
mm-hmm.
that don't want to get a haircut, that don't mm-hmm. want to do anything, but they're doing it. You know how many parents are sitting in a house that lost one child, can't even move. I get like that. And it's so scary to me because it's three. Mm-hmm. So in heart. Heartbroken. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's so scary because I know somebody that died of a broken heart.
Mm.
She wasn't sick. Nothing was wrong with her. Her son just passed away.
Mm.
She died.
So you want to give them hope again?
We have to do something with each other, because I don't want people to think that, oh, how can she help me? She's still broken. But believe it or not, you can help me. We can help each other.
That's right.
Because you women are helping mm-hmm. me right now.
Mm.
Just by having me sitting here talking about it. Because believe it or not, it's good to talk to a psychiatrist or a therapist. But sometimes it's just better to talk to people.
That's mm-hmm. what's up. Hold on, say that again for the people in the back. It's good. Because we're going to use that.
It's good to talk to a therapist all the time. Mm-hmm. But if you have it, sisters like yourself, mm-hmm. see, I'm blessed for that. A lot of people may not have that, mm-hmm. but I'm blessed for that.
But we're going to give them that. Mm-hmm. So that's what this platform is all about. Hold on, get mm-hmm. your other sister's mm-hmm. hand. Mm-hmm. Y'all, this is what this platform is all about. It's called collective healing. And the city where she lost three is in the city where we gained, I'm going to call it millions, right? Because it was in that place when I was going through my hell that I didn't really tell anybody about. Mm-hmm. After coming home, getting it together, thinking I had it together, that I began to heal in the city. We started this collective healing group where we shared. And I didn't know Tara. Tara didn't know me, but we shared mm-hmm. and we've been getting to heal together. So I'm purposely having you lock in to Tara's hand And I'm going to reach out to the screen, Tara. Mm-hmm. Hit the other side of your mm-hmm. screen. We're looking for y'all. We need y'all. Our sisters out there that's hurting, that need to be healed. Folks that's going through something. This is the place. And we're not saying, hey, tell all your business and be stuck. We saying, no, sis, I went through something and I need you because you may be able to identify with my story. Like formerly incarcerated people identify with mine. Folks that's going through it that have lost children may identify with Sonia's, and those that have been through heartbreak, such as my sister Tara, may identify with her. We all we got. And if we lock in together, we could collectively heal.
And we could all heal together. See, the thing is, it's nothing wrong with stepping out your box and asking for it. I'm receiving it now. I never asked for it. And so I appreciate that because it was a mental thing for me. You know, the thinking about it all the time, the this, the that. When you go to these therapists, they talk about it, but they open the door and they set you free.
Mm. And then you got to live again.
Mm-hmm. And you have to live through.
Well, guess what we're going to do? Our sister Kimberly Hill came on. She lost her son, right? We had our other sister come on who lost her daughter. Mm-hmm. Now we got you that came on, and now you've lost your three sons. So this is what we got to do. Right now in our community, we are going to start a support group for anyone who has lost a kid. We're going to give you guys a space to fellowship together collectively when y'all need each other, just to be able to say, sis, you good? Mm-hmm. Do the check-ins, because that's what we do in our community. In our community, in such a quick span, we form this sisterhood and we share. We have live meetings with one another. I need you through our voices, because that's baby, that's what you put together. Through our voices, we need that to shine. And we're going to open up through our voices, right? We're going to give you a room, a spaces in a community. So when you going through, you don't got to act like it. You don't got to say, oh, I don't feel it. Oh, I'm all right. No, today, y'all, I ain't all right. Mm-hmm. Today, I'm feeling a little down. Today, I'm feeling depressed. And somebody else can say, sis, that's all right. Well, you know what? Let's put on your little happy song. Mm-hmm. Somebody to take you out of that space of depression, because I know so much what it feels like because I've been stuck in that for a long time myself. So will you open up for that opportunity to open up your doors of through our voices in the Black Women's Lives Matter the community?
We're not gonna set you free.
No, we're not gonna set you free. We're not gonna collect your money until you got it. You feel me?
Yeah.
We're gonna open you that sisterhood. So y'all, if y'all wanna join our community, it's at www.blackwomenslivesmatter.com. Through our voices. We setting it up right now. I got my sister in the back. Getting ready to set the room up, baby, through our voices. If you've lost a loved one, and I'm not even going to make this thing kid specific, but if you lost a loved one, if you're hurting, if you're going through grief, I'm calling for our grief counselors out there because I know a few, right? We need you to get up and pull up in our community. Folks are hurting. Folks need to heal. And heal together with us, sis.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with trying to come together. And I'm not saying that, you know, I'm better than anybody. But it is so time to heal because tomorrow is not promised to.
That's right.
Any of us. In the same way I hurt, the same way I hurt that young man mother that killed my baby, she hurt too. Somebody killed her son.
So you saying she also?
Yeah, and it's not the fact that I shouldn't care. She a Black woman.
Mm-hmm. We all going through it, and it's a
all
cycle.
Going through it. I didn't tell my son to pick up a gun to do anything to anybody. So how can you ridicule somebody else? Even though some of these parents I know
telling them to do that, you which
know,
is crazy.
Not even telling their kids to do it, but some of these parents I know. But I had a son. So, you know, like I said, it sounds like a wolf cry
mm-hmm.
for me.
No, it's not a wolf cry, sis. You're not crying wolf no more. You standing on business through our voices, right. Baby. All right, well, thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of I Love Me More podcast. If you haven't already, join our after chat. Let's talk about what we just talked about. Visit us right now at www.blackwomenslivesmatter.com. And you already know what it is. It's going down. See you next week.
On the next episode of I Love Me More podcast.
I literally went from rags to riches. I went from starving, not getting my hair combed, not being cared for, to walking around, you know, rolling around in Rolls Royces, like literally.
So I am from the south side of Chicago. Grew up there during the crack era in the 80s. I had a parent, my mom, addicted to crack. We were living in like a two-bedroom home. So it was my grandmother, her sister, and her brother, and my grandmother's six daughters and all of their children. What happens, we get out. They literally just ostracized me from the family. Like, I was exiled from the family. And it's like, what did I do? Like, I didn't do anything wrong. And I'm so young at the time, I'm like 11. So me not having them to lean on, I suffered for years. No one knew that he was beating me. He ended up moving down the street from me. He harassed me for like 2 years. It was so crazy, guys, that I literally felt like he was going to kill me.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.